back on IRIV English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Islamic Upbringing with Sayyid Abdullah and Musa. We're talking about concepts that we want to inculcate our children with. So, we talked about mercy, we talked about love, which is the opposite of hate. Mm. What is the next concept?
The next concept we also need to teach our kids, that there are things which are harmful for them. And so this is a very broad concept again. So it includes many things. And I say this why? Because I have a lot of parents coming up to me telling me, look, my son has this bad thing. He's doing, for example, he's smoking. Or he's doing drugs. Or, for example, he's addicted to pornography. Or he's doing this and that. Harmful things, right? And they want a treatment. It's going to be very hard to treat something that already happened. But from the beginning, you need to teach your kids that there are things that are harmful for them. And you need to talk about these harmful things. For example, many parents, they say, well, if I talk to my child about the effects of smoking, he might go and smokes. No, who says that? So they are afraid of introducing their kids to something that, no, and on the contrary, if you have the right methods to teach your child that, for example, smoking is bad, and you show him pictures and videos and stuff like that, and you educate him correctly, because until now he doesn't know what nicotine is. He hasn't smoked nicotine, so his system is clear. So you program his mind that this something is bad, right? Then he will not smoke when he grows old. One of the best methods to quit smoking, I've read a book recently, to quit smoking, and what it does, it reprograms your brain. As you read the book, the writer wrote the book very smartly, very eloquently, that he is actually manipulating your mind as you read, but you don't notice. So subconsciously, he's working on you. By the time you finish reading the book, you'll feel disgusted from smoking, right?
That's
very smart. And now they even have clinics now, these people. He opened clinics all over the world. And he says, in 1 hour, I make you quit smoking. No nicotine patches, no nothing. Mm. Just reprogramming your brain. Mm. So sometimes when we bring our kids and we teach them that this thing is bad, and not just say, don't do it. If you say, don't smoke, I guarantee he will go smoke. If you say, do not watch this, I guarantee he will go watch it. Don't listen to music, I guarantee he will go listen to music. But rather explain to them what they are, why they are bad, and what is the effect of them in this world and in the hereafter. So he's equipped logically in his mind, he's very equipped that when he sees it in front of him, he will back off.
It seems very central when we're trying to prevent our children from doing wrong things, that they must feel that they are respected, that they are not forced into anything.
Well, that's the golden rule. And inshallah, we'll talk about this concept a lot later on.
Mm-hmm.
That always, anything that's forceful is not going to work. But when you give him an option, when you speak to him, he feels he is a part of this whole conversation. He feels that he has an existence.
Mm-hmm.
So when you try to talk to him and educate him and tell him this is good, this is bad, he feels that he has an identity that he can... that he looks up to and he can see.
It's kind of like
overridden.
Kind of like reverse psychology. They are placed in a position where if they want to be respected to themselves, they have to make the right decision. For instance, not smoking.
Of course.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. But if you miss the program, don't worry. You can always download an archive of this episode and all our previous episodes from our website. Simply visit parstoday.com. That's parstoday.com. Find the Call of Islam link and you will see us right there. Islamic Upbringing. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. That's englishradio@irib.ir. And also you can communicate with us directly through our social media accounts. Search at Call of Islam Radio on Instagram, Telegram, YouTube, and Twitter. Until next episode, happy parenting. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. complete way.
Round the World with Reporters.
Over 1 month since a ceasefire came into force between the Israeli regime and Hamas, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip still suffer from psychological trauma and feel unsafe. While fears are rising of another round of violence, Palestinians mark 15 years of a land, air, and sea Israeli blockade that has devastated Gaza's economy and caused widespread destruction, leaving most people largely cut off from the outside world.
The Israeli blockade imposed for 15 years led Palestinians to call for simple solutions. This blockade, of course, affected all life aspects, especially the rate of poverty and unemployment. There are many graduates who are jobless now. Wars and Israeli blockade isolated Gaza from the world, and it's not surprising that many countries know nothing about Gaza.
Israeli blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip affected badly on all life aspects, leading to high rates of poverty and unemployment. Most of the working-age population in the Gaza Strip are unemployed and without any source of income due to the lack of job opportunities.
There are a lot of graduated people without a job in Gaza. The unemployment rate is high and there are no job opportunities. For 15 years, we have been living in the same situation. There has been continuous escalations and war over Gaza, and people will suffer from everything and nothing changes.
Due to the limited sources and restrictions imposed in movement and entry of goods and fuel, only a limited amount of fuel and cooking gas reach homes and the electricity plant. As a result, Gazans are suffering an electricity crisis that has devastated daily life, especially on clean water, as people in Gaza suffer from salty and polluted water that is not fit for drinking. Both the continuous violence over the Strip and the Israeli blockade affected badly on every aspect of life for Palestinians, isolating and depriving them from their rights. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
We have a duty to fight them.
Stop denying racism and start dismantling it. Those were the unequivocal comments by Michelle Bachelet, the United Nations Human Rights Chief, following a landmark report launched after the killing of George Floyd in the United States, which called on countries worldwide to do more to tackle the systemic racism against people of African descent.
I'm calling on all states to stop denying and start dismantling racism, to end impunity and build trust, to listen to the voices of people of African descent, and to confront past legacies and deliver redress.
The report found that police use of racial profiling and excessive force was systemic in much of North America, Europe, and Latin America.
We're suffering right across the world. Adam Traoré in France, George Floyd in America, Dalian Atkinson and Kevin Clark here in the United Kingdom. You know, 24 people were shot in the favelas of African descent by Brazilian police, you know, in the last 12 months. So you can see that wherever you look.
It also concluded that racism was the biggest problem in countries steeped in the history of the transatlantic slave trade, which ultimately laid the foundation for much of the wealth they enjoy today.
The report highlighted the UK as one of 60 countries that needs to do more to help bring an end to systemic racism, notably urging them to apologise to people of African descent and make amends through reparations. Yet despite the UK playing a leading role in the transatlantic slave trade, so far the British state has shown an unwillingness to do either.
Michelle Bachelet acknowledged the pivotal role that the Black Lives Matter movement played in bringing this conversation to the forefront, but accepted that now it's on states around the world to take concrete action and make amends for centuries of violence and discrimination. But for countries like the United Kingdom, just issuing an apology would be a start. Ahmed Kabbalah, London.
Amen. American and NATO forces have finally left Afghanistan's Bagram Air Base, the hub of the US military operations in the country for nearly 20 years. The pullout marks a symbolic end to what US President Joe Biden has called Washington's forever war. It comes after Biden announced earlier this year his decision to withdraw all U.S. forces from Afghanistan by the 20th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. The pullout has been welcomed by the Afghan people.
This is good news that the Americans left Bagram. The Americans had reached an agreement with the Taliban in Doha, and these agreements must be implemented. And this is for the good of Afghanistan.
Inshallah, God willing, there will be peace in this country. We want peace until the end. God is merciful, and we hope that one day there will be peace in our country.
The Taliban militant group has also welcomed the withdrawal as a positive step. The group's spokesman said the full withdrawal of foreign forces will pave the way for Afghans to decide about their future themselves. In February 2020, the administration of former President Donald Trump struck a deal with the Taliban to withdraw all U.S. troops from Afghanistan by May 2021. Joe Biden rescheduled the date and set September 11th for the pullout. The U.S. and its NATO allies invaded Afghanistan in October 2001 under the pretext of the so-called War on Terror. The Taliban militant group was removed from power following the invasion. However, after nearly two decades, the U.S. invasion failed to uproot the militant group, and Washington had to finally sit at the negotiating table with the group. According to the Pentagon, the U.S. military operations in Afghanistan have cost nearly $825 billion. Also, according to U.S. media reports, more than 2,400 U.S. military personnel have been killed in Afghanistan. The U.S. war in Afghanistan has left thousands of Afghan civilians dead and caused a significant damage to the country's infrastructure. And now, with the prospect of an end to the war, which though failed to bring security to the country, calls will certainly get louder for the prosecution of American troops and officials involved in the war crimes against the Afghan people.
Yemen's Ministry of Electricity held a sit-in protest in front of the United Nations office in the capital Sana'a to call all the international community to step in and to pressure Saudi Arabia to stop detaining Yemeni oil vessels. The ministry said it is unable to generate power anymore due to the lack of fuel.
Electricity is an essential service and has nothing to do with any political conflicts. The power sector in Yemen has been heavily affected since the first moment of the war. The Saudi-led coalition has directly targeted all electric power plants, and this is a great tragedy for us. The UN has not done anything to end the suffering of Yemenis. We demand the lifting of the siege and releasing the oil ships so we can generate electricity again.
At the same place, Yemeni children organized a gallery for the drawings. The gallery was named The U.S. Kills Our Childhood and exhibited children's drawings that show the suffering of Yemeni children due to the ongoing conflict.
We participated in this protest to tell the United Nations, which classified Ansarullah in its blacklist of groups violating children's rights. We Yemenis demand our rights like any other people, on top of which is the lifting of the siege imposed on us by Saudi Arabia.
How many fathers and mothers have lost their children? This is a massive crime. This is tyranny. We are little children. We have no fault.
Saudi Arabia, backed by Washington, launched a devastating war on the impoverished country in March 2015, killing tens of thousands of civilians, including women and children, and imposing an all-out blockade.
Yemenis have held hundreds of protests here in front of the United Nations office, but the international body has not yet taken any strict measures to end the suffering of the millions of Yemenis. That is why the UN describes the situation in Yemen as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana'a.
The leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki, is standing trial for allegations of culpable homicide, unlawful assembly, disruption of public peace, among other charges which the Islamic cleric has denied. Rounding up his address to the court, the leader of the defense team explained that the prosecution has not established any case against Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki. He said none of the people accused of the crimes attributed it to his client, and the court has released many of them.
If we feel that no prima facie case has been established against your client, you make a no-case submission, and that is what has happened in this case. So we are waiting for the ruling of the court.
The prosecution has presented a total of 15 witnesses, including Nigerian military officers. But Zazaki's defense team said all the witnesses that were brought before the court confirmed that they did not see Sheikh Zazaki during the attack by the army.
The prosecution called 15 witnesses. We felt that no case has been made to warrant our clients being asked to give evidence. In other words, we address the court to defend that there is nothing to defend on the part of our client.
The trial judge adjourned the case to July 28, when he is expected to deliver his ruling on the no-case submission by Zazaki's defense team. Sheikh Zazaki has been in detention since December 2015 after soldiers of the Nigerian army attacked his home and worship center, killing over 340 of his supporters. Members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria have continued with their protests, demanding the release of Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat. They have always insisted that Islamic cleric is an innocent man who has suffered persecution by the Nigerian government. Benjamin Abdullahi, Kaduna.
Bashir Ahmed Baba is a free man now. 12 years back, he was detained at the Gujarat state of India for a crime he was unaware of.
I used to work for a German-based NGO. I and my colleague, who was non-Kashmiri, had gone to attend the training workshop on children with disabilities. It was a two-week-long program, but I was detained on the sixth day while my colleague was set free.
Baba was detained under a controversial Unlawful Activities Prevention Act, or UAPA, and was accused of making bombs in soft drink cans.
I was unaware of what I was being questioned about. I even couldn't read the charge sheet because it was in the local language. But one thing I was sure about is that one day I would walk free, because I knew I was innocent. But I never knew it would take 12 years to prove it.
Unlawful activity is defined vaguely in the law as any action, whether by an individual or an association, which disclaims, questions, disrupts, or is intended to disrupt the sovereignty and territorial integrity of India, or causes or is intended to cause disaffection against India. According to the National Crime Records Bureau data, there's a rising graph of UAPA cases in Jammu and Kashmir. The UAPA law has come under stern criticism after several activists and journalists in India were booked under it by the Hindu nationalist Narendra Modi-led Bharatiya Janata Party. Scores of Kashmiris are languishing in the jails across India. Providing legal aid and frequent meeting with the prisoners has become a challenge for their families.
In these 12 years, I have seen him once, that only after I sold my gold earring. We were drained financially after his father died of cancer, so going to him was out of our bounds.
Analysts say unlawful detention is a violation of human rights, and the covenants of civil and political rights say such people need to be compensated for unlawful detention, and for those who have falsely implicated them also need to be tried in the name of malicious prosecution.
In India, in case of Muslims in general and Kashmiris in particular, the law enforcing authorities have been given a license to harass, implicate and detain without any cause. That is why we find Muslim population in India is just 15%, whereas 35% prisoners of India are Muslims, and most of them are falsely implicated.
Sheikh added, Kashmir is an exceptional case where New Delhi has placed laws that allow authorities to detain people without any reason. Baba is happy to be back and is rejoicing the reunion with his family members. however, is in a constant dilemma where and how to start fresh. Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
For the first time in decades, Canada Day celebrations have been mostly muted as the country sees old wounds reopened. Various cities scrapped the celebrations following a series of horrific discoveries of unmarked graves around former Catholic schools for Indigenous children. Calls to scale back or cancel celebrations snowballed in May and June when almost 1,000 unmarked graves were found. Another discovery this week, comprising 182 graves of children aged 7 to 15, made matters even worse. The new findings have fueled outrage in the country over a lack of information and accountability regarding violations of Indigenous people's rights. The graves remind people of the horrors experienced by thousands of kids that were supposed to be assimilated into the white society in church-run boarding schools. Rallies have been held to honor over 4,000 victims of Canada's infamous residential schools, while Indigenous leaders have been calling for a thorough investigation. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has described the discoveries as a shameful reminder of systemic racism and urged the Catholic Church to take responsibility. The Roman Catholic Church is yet to issue a formal apology. Activists, however, believe the government is trying to put the onus on the Catholic Church and downplay its central role.
The Canadian government currently is trying to kind of put the onus more on the Catholic Church, on the churches, but obviously the Canadian government is central to this whole horrific history and ongoing colonization.
Indigenous children are not the only victims of racism in Canada. Reports say thousands of Indigenous women and girls have been murdered or gone missing in the country over the past 30 years. The National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls says a genocide is being perpetrated. But that's not all. A deadly attack on a Muslim family last month in Ontario and attacks on women wearing hijab in Alberta testified to the fact that racism has deep roots in the Canadian society. A new opinion poll shows some 36% of the Indigenous people and 42% of minorities believe Canada is a racist country. Canada, a country with a dark colonial history, has for decades depicted itself as an outspoken critic of racism and a leading advocate of human rights. But the latest discoveries of Indigenous graves and attacks against Muslims show Canada is yet to take meaningful measures to root out racism in its own society.
Every year in late June and early July, Iranians flock to the graveyard in southern Tehran and sprinkle rose petals on tombs. Buried here are the victims of a terrorist attack in 1981 that bombed the central office of Iran's Islamic Republic Party, killing 73 key officials, including the then Justice Chief Ayatollah Mohammad Beheshti, who was viewed as the second man of the nascent Islamic Republic after its founder, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini.
I lost my father in the 1981 bombing of the Islamic Republic Party's headquarters. I was 9 back then. I still miss him so much, and I come here every year to commemorate him.
The killing of the Iranian politicians back then was a terrorist act that was supported by the U.S. The terrorists are now residing in France, so we ask the French government to hand them over to face justice.
The formidable Mujahideen Khalq terrorist organization took responsibility for the 1981 bombing. Known as the MKO, the terror group has a history of assassinations against Iranian statesmen and civilians, killing at least 12,000 Iranians.
Ask any Iranian about the MKO, and they will call them Munafiqin, the Persian word for hypocrites. This is because they call themselves the Crusaders of People's Cause, but in fact, they killed people to climb to power. What's even more ironic is the fact that the U.S. and some other Western countries nourish the MKO terrorists.
This man is believed to be the spearhead of the 1981 terror attack. After the incident, Mohammad Reza Kolahi sought refuge in the Netherlands under the false identity of Ali Mu'tamed, where he was warmly accommodated until he was disposed of by the MKO in 2015.
When Mr. Kulahi fled Iran to the Netherlands, Iran asked the Netherlands to hand him over, but it didn't do so. This shows that the West has a selective approach to terrorism.
This is not where the West's support for the terror group ends. In 2012, the US and Europe delisted the MKO as a terrorist organization. Following this measure, the group was relocated from its former stronghold at a US military base in Iraq to Albania and France. Ever since, the MKO has held regular meetings with American and European officials. The 1981 assassination of Iranian officials, along with other similar events, such as the 1988 downing of an Iranian passenger plane by the U.S. Army and Iraq's chemical bombardment of Sardasht, falls in the same time frame, between June 26th and July the 3rd. U.S. footprints can be traced in all of the incidents. That's why Iran has designated this period as the Week of American Human Rights, as a jab that questions the U.S. double standards when it comes to the issue of human rights. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
China is building up nearly 3,000-kilometer-long network of roads, railway lines, and investing tens of billions of U.S. dollars in Pakistan's energy and infrastructure projects under its mega Belt and Road Global Initiative. The major road infrastructure links western China to Deep Gwadar Port in southwest of Pakistan, 75 kilometers east of Iran, at the top of Arabian Sea. The U.S. feels threatened over expansion of Chinese economic influence in the rest of the world through Gwadar Port, which also serves as an alternative option for Beijing in the event of military blockade of Chinese Navy in South China Sea by the U.S. and its allies. The U.S. has been pressurizing Pakistan into shelving Chinese mega projects, calling it a debt trap. Washington has been struggling hard to win over Islamabad in its what appears to be a cold war with Beijing over growing Chinese economic influence in the world.
Pakistan thinks that it is very unfair for the U.S. or other powers, Western powers, for countries like us to take sides. Why do we have to take sides?
It's not going to happen that if there's pressure put on Pakistan to change its relationship or downgrade its relationship with China. It won't happen. Our relationship between the two countries, no matter what pressure is put on us, is not going to change.
We do not expect that living at the backyard of such a rising power, which happens to be luckily our strategic partner, how could we downgrade our relation with them and side or be more close with someone who's 10,000 miles away? So it is very unrealistic to expect of Pakistan. Militarily, we would not involve ourselves in the conflicts of the region.
The unprecedented cold shouldering to the U.S. has followed a series of Pakistan's policy decisions to no longer get itself involved in any U.S.-driven military conflict across the region. Islamabad has outrightly rejected the U.S. request to set up military bases in Pakistan. The American CIA chief, William Byrne, who was on a secret visit to Pakistan a few weeks ago, was reportedly snubbed upon his request to see Prime Minister to reconsider his decision on military bases. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
A group of demonstrators gathered at the Manitoba legislature on Thursday, July 1st, as the country marked Canada Day and pulled down a statue of Queen Victoria. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Julia Conley, reporter. This article is published under the heading Queen Statues Toppled Amid Outrage Over Unmarked Graves of Indigenous Children. Stay tuned for more. The number of unmarked graves of Indigenous children discovered in Canada passed 1,000. Rights advocates in Winnipeg, Manitoba toppled two statues connected with the country's past of genocide and forced assimilation. A group of demonstrators gathered at the Manitoba legislature on Thursday, July 1st, as the country marked Canada Day and pulled down a statue of Queen Victoria. The Queen led the British monarchy in 1867 when Canada was established as a country and was in power when the government and the Catholic Church began a residential school system for Indigenous children that was linked to the disappearances and abuse of thousands of children. Demonstrators chanted, "No pride in genocide," and covered the statue's base in red-painted handprints, displaying a sign reading, "We were children once, bring them home." "This queen is one that gave our land away just like that to her merry gentlemen, her fair traders." Belinda Vanderbrook, a survivor of the residential school system who addressed the crowd, told CBC, "So, I really have no place for her in my heart. I never did. She means nothing to me except that her policies and her colonialism is what is dictating us right to this minute as you and I speak," unquote. On Thursday, July 1st, the Lure Kootenai Band said they had found 182 human remains on the grounds of a former residential school in British Columbia. A week after the Kawas First Nation discovered 751 unmarked graves at the Maryvale Indian Residential School in Saskatchewan, which was in operation until 1997. date last month, the Tukumpulus First Nation found 215 bodies in unmarked graves underground of the Camp Loops Indian Residential School in British Columbia. The discoveries made with radar technology likely represent a fraction of the children who died and were buried in unmarked graves in the residential school system, officials say. From 1880s until 1990s, about 150,000 Indigenous children were sent to residential schools across the country, where many were subjected to physical, sexual, and emotional abuse, punished violently for using their native languages, and forced to convert to Christianity and use new names. The Manitoba government building, demonstrators also toppled the smaller statue of Queen Elizabeth II. According to the BBC, police used a stun gun to arrest one man at a protest. A Truth and Reconciliation Commission said in 2015 that the school system was a government attempt at cultural genocide. Indigenous people and allies gathered elsewhere in Canada, including Ottawa, London, Ontario, and Fredericton, New Brunswick, where they marched and held vigils for the children who were victims of the residential school system and demanded that the government take the actions called for by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission 6 years ago. Robert Limon, co-founder of the Indigenous Activist Collective, at an event in St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador, said, "We have been shown and let down so many times before by our premiers and prime ministers, by politicians, police, churches, schools, and institutions, that they are not going to listen to the thousands of hours of lived experiences. They are not going to listen to peace and friendship. They are going to listen to pressure."
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, boys and girls, and other life forms. You are listening to the one, the only youth station brought to you by Arab English Radio. I'm Zainab.
And I'm Mehdi, and welcome to Youth Station.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, bro. How are you doing?
I'm alright, I'm not bad. How are you?
Alhamdulillah. We are talking about courage during 2021. As a species, one which possesses the highest level of intellect among all of Allah's creations, right? We have been equipped with the ability to adapt with every and any given situation, call it natural selection, call it Darwin's theory, call it whatever you may, but often it is labeled as courage. We as a species have the courage to explore our different options, to lay out plans and blueprints and think of different scenarios of how to make something work out for us, how to deal with it, to experiment, to do this, to do that, and to just mold and navigate the situation to have the best outcome and result for our species.
Mm-hmm.
No other species can do that.
Yeah, you're right.
Right?
Yeah,
and I guess the easiest word for it is courage. We have the courage to do that. If we were monkeys, we would probably be dead.
Yeah, but like animals, there are a lot of animals who've got courage. But yeah, we've got the mind, the brains for it also.
Mm.
Yeah,
and often, the thing with the courage of animals is like it's a survival instinct for themselves as an individual.
Or that it's unaware of what's really happening.
Unaware of what's really happening, right? But like, imagine a mama lion attacking a herd of, I don't know, water buffaloes. Because they're a tad bit too close to her territory. She's still doing it out of survival instincts, right?
Yeah.
But as human beings, we often display courage even if we feel like I'm going to end up dead. In fact, that's the highest level of our courage. I'm going to die, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know why? For the better good.
Yeah,
for the greater good.
Pretty much.
For the rest of the people.
The mama lion would do, but yeah, you're right.
The mama lion would never charge into a herd of water buffaloes and get herself killed to protect her territory. Do you even watch Discovery Channel or Nat Geo?
Yeah, and that pretty much happens all the time.
Get
but you
out!
Know,
some people display it as adapting to the state of a, you know, pandemic. Some people display it through
doing things that they wouldn't do.
Yeah, getting out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, precisely.
Right.
Yeah.
So this pandemic did zilch. To help with me getting out of my comfort, it just broadened my comfort zone.
Yeah,
my comfort zone used to be
a
cube, and now it's like the entirety of the continent.
Yeah, because your comfort zone is more of a social thing, right?
No, no, anti-social. I'd rather stay at home.
Yeah, social. I mean, like it's got to do with social,
oh,
not
yeah.
being social, right? And
yeah.
other people, their comfort zone is physical or being challenged in a manner, right?
Mm.
So, people who did not like challenges and did not like change. They got challenged in 2021 or
so
2020,
much,
right?
So much.
Cause, yeah, they had to come up with ways that they'd never thought of. And people who were worried about their physical health and safety were challenged, right?
Mm.
And
were you challenged in any of these ways?
No, really
were you not.
Not
worried about your own health?
Yeah, in the first month, I think, it was a bit scary. It was
definitely.
Scary.
We've all felt a little like...
Then,
jittery about it. I wouldn't say scared per se.
I was worried though, because I remember.
Because you have a baby, is why.
Yeah.
Do you think you'd be that worried if you were just, you know, single?
No.
Exactly.
Not at all. Not at all.
Again, survival instincts, mama lion.
Yeah.
Papa lion.
I remember I was at a shop and I had forgotten my mask and I wasn't breathing.
Oh,
remember, like,
God.
That's how concerned I was about my health.
Was everyone else wearing a mask?
No.
Oh.
No, pretty much. People, some people are really...
Even back then?
Yeah, they were calm. They were very calm. So as I was saying, for those people who've not felt challenged in years and years, right, had no choice but to get challenged, right?
A tad bit. Oh, yeah, you're right. I had friends that, like, legit slipped into full-blown depression because their lives had been turned upside down because of the pandemic. They couldn't travel. They couldn't go out. They were actually, they were very social individuals. And then officially, the brand of the pandemic was social distancing. And they were like, what?
Some people's lives depended on social interacting with
exactly.
people, right? Even their profession might be, like, directly...
Engaging
with people, and that's how they make a living out of it. And that also broke people down, right?
Definitely.
Financially. And
oh, yes. I think the greatest problem anyone could have felt through the pandemic was the financial
aspect to it.
Financial aspect, yeah. Because, you know, health, the thing with health is that though it is among... Our hadith tell us that it's one of the most valuable blessings Allah has bestowed upon us, right? Health and maybe, I don't know, youth or something? I don't know.
Yeah, safety.
Yeah, and safety. But you still feel like it's bound to happen. You're not supposed to stay healthy forever. Something's bound to hit you at some point in life.
Mm.
Even if you're like the healthiest, most athletic human being, you'll get hit by a car, right? Like...
Yeah.
But then when you have the money, you still feel like...
You give the sadaqah and then you...
And you feel reinforced somehow. You feel like a shield. You have this shield, you have something to fall back on. If I got sick, I'll pay the bills. I'll take supplementary pills. I'll bounce back on my feet. But then when you reach... When you face a financial problem, it really feels like rock bottom. And my heart aches for those people who had to face both. They lost their job and that's they got mental. Inflicted.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm like, oh, that's courage. I don't know how you did it and how you adapted, but you single-handedly displayed the highest level of courage as a species and as a human being.
Yeah, and they made us proud, haven't they? These people made human beings proud.
Definitely.
And we've got a lot to learn from these people.
Yeah.
I was about to say before you said that about money, that even if you're healthy and you hit that bankruptcy,
financial wall,
you're done. You know,
so many people commit suicide because of it.
Yeah, even if you're fit, you end up making yourself unfit and depression or things along the lines.
Exactly.
Of depression.
I mean, it's not right. You know, it happens. But it's not right.
It's got its own reasons and causes.
But
also,
it's clearly because we don't have enough faith in the provider, right?
Exactly.
I mean, he provided for me thus long. Now I'm facing an inconvenience and I'm going to question his entire existence and, you know, do something drastic and, I don't know, probably stupid about it. But it definitely happens. And you're so right. Like, families fall apart and people fall apart and empires fall apart because of this issue. Again, it brings us back to Greece. Today is International Greece Day.
Yeah, but those people who already had health issues and now they hit the financial rock bottom, they had to build up courage from anywhere. Or as you said, people committed suicide, which is sad. So they had to develop a set of skills to help themselves out because their previous set of skills is no longer in use, right? Well, yeah, that's also within the set of skills that they had to face it now. They had to come out of their
comfort zone
or den.
The cave,
yeah, the thing that moles live in. Yeah, they had to come out of that and, they had to face the world.
All right, you're listening to Youth Station. We're going to be back after a short message, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
Another group of people that definitely, I feel, displayed a whole lot of courage and still going so strong since the beginning of this pandemic. I don't want to make this all about the pandemic, but like basically it's been the highlight or the low light. Or basically it's been written in bold from the beginning of 2020 through 2021, and we're still so very much dealing with it, is the doctors and nurses and... The medicals, right?
Frontline workers.
Yeah, exactly. The medical frontliners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They've been very courageous. They risked it all, bro.
They lost lives. That's how you can put it. That's it.
Exactly. That's how you measure courage.
The thing is, they had a greater cause. They have a greater cause.
What was their greater cause?
Humanity.
Okay.
Right? Lives of other people. Yeah. Stepping on yourself and... in order to help people, right, for their good. Could have been, but it could not have been for money. The way people...
It's not like they made more money.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
They just got
their, like, their usual wages, and then they did, like, quadruple of what they've been doing all their lives to save people and putting themselves actively at risk.
Yeah.
And if that's not courage, I don't know what is. There are so many other fields.
And the thing is, it wasn't even... at that time, it wasn't even... known what this thing is, how
exactly.
It all works, you know, masks and all these things that what percentage and what you do to avoid it was at a later stage that we found out how it works. We still haven't found out precisely how it works because it mutates, but these people, they risked it all, not knowing what's going to come out of the tunnel at the other end. Yeah, that's it, and they went for it. I think there's plenty for us to see in these people that, they are things in life that are greater than ourselves and our motivations that are very limited, right? It does teach us to see the bigger picture, right? And aim for that and ignore the discomforts that we see and try to build up against those discomforts and head towards that direction.
That's definitely what courage is. If we were just to, we're here on Youth Station talking about courage in 2021, and I want to just broaden that a little bit, the topic, and take it further away from this whole pandemic issue, and just basically talking about courage during modern times and the different ways it displays itself. I think definitely one of the things that takes a lot of courage and guts, like sheer hardcore guts, for people to do is talk against
oppression. No.
Yes, but especially when that oppression is like a trending thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, elaborate.
All right. First thing that might come to someone's mind is this whole Palestine dilemma, Palestine problem, genocide, massacre. But in every other field as well, sometimes there's this oppression, not just in the sense of taking lives and usurping land, right? Oppression in the sense of this is not good for humanity, right? And everyone's talking about it. Everyone's even labeling it and presenting it under the guise of human rights, equal rights, I don't know, gender equality, all of that, right? And then someone comes out and says, y'all are full of nonsense. That's not how it works. The science, the statistics, the psychology, the design of the universe does not support it at all. These are the facts. Here's a spreadsheet. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. That takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Especially if you are being supported by everyone. You know, it's easier when you are at the other end. For example, I've always, not me, just this is hypothetical, I've always been against the norms, right?
Yeah.
The trends, I've always been against those trends, and I've been saying these things out, putting them out. But once those people who've been part of that society and they haven't felt like that before, or they haven't expressed what they felt before, for those people to take a step and come out and say, you know what, this is it, and this isn't
that's
right anymore, you know, they might not have realized it, and now they've realized it, or they had enough now. They come out and they take a step for it, and they, you know, they're like, no, this is not how it's supposed to go, and this isn't right. Those people are even more brave compared to those people who live in a society. The entire society is, well, smart enough to discourage or
basically dis.
Ideological oppression. That's what this is.
It is ideological oppression. Standing against all sorts of oppression takes a lot of courage, especially when it's ideological oppression. Kudos to whoever's out there who's able to do that. That's all the time we have for today's episode of Youth Station. Thank you so very much for being with us. I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.